Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Willis Reed, it wasn't for James Harden, but if it inspired Kevin Durant to greatness the way Reed did for Walt Frazier back in the day, it worked just as well for the Brooklyn Nets. Folks, this is a very special City Game podcast.
Take it, shoot that. How are we going in the middle?
Welcome to City Game, your Brooklyn Nets podcast on WFAN and radio.com. Here's your host, Steve Lichtenstein.
And hello again, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the City Game podcast, the show for Brooklyn Nets fans. I'm Steve Lichtenstein of WFAN.com, and folks, I think my tweet after the Nets' pivotal Game 5 victory over the Bucks on Tuesday night said it all. I just felt so privileged to be inside Barclays Center on the night Kevin Durant put forth the greatest performance I've ever seen. Remember, folks, I'm pretty old, and I've seen lots of NBA games in person. KD, though, he was just I don't know what's the word. I mean, I keep thinking of the old movie Annie Hall and Woody Allen's date gushing over some cult figure as transplendent. I don't know, is that even a word? Whatever. You know, my son Jack texted me that it was simply absurd. It certainly was historic. 49 points on just 23 field goal attempts, 17 rebounds, 10 assists. First player in NBA playoff history to record a triple-double of that magnitude. Goes without saying that it also set a Nets playoff scoring record. Three steals and two blocks as well. He played every second of the game. You know, knowing that Coach Steve Nash was going to have to ride him, I had set like this unofficial over-under line at 44 minutes for him. KD crashed through it with apparent ease. And Harden? In about 24 hours, this guy went from being declared out with, you know, that hamstring relapse he suffered in game one, to doubtful, then to questionable. And finally, you know, after some physical therapy and a good pregame warm-up, to available for the starting lineup. And then he goes out and labors for 46 minutes on that bum hamstring. You know, missing 9 of his 10 shots, including all 8 from beyond the three-point line. But, you know, to me, I viewed him as a settling fixture out there, despite almost no mobility on the defensive end. And he was inspirational. So, with this amazing 114-108 victory, the Nets are now up 3-2 on the Bucks with Game 6 set for Milwaukee on Thursday night. And believe me, I know all too well that this series is far from over. But I think I speak for most of you when I thought that the Nets were toast if they couldn't put Tuesday night in the win column. But they did. And really, I'm just so thrilled that this season isn't quite over. So I felt the need to go out and get you the most enthusiastic special guest I know. And that's the fantastic voice of the Brooklyn Nets on WFAN and the Nets Radio Network. The longtime color commentator Tim Capstraw will be joining me shortly. So should be a good show for you folks today. Like always, I ask that you please subscribe to this podcast wherever you choose to download the episode, be it Odyssey, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or some other platform. And if you're on Apple, please let me know what you think in the review section. So, like I imagine most of my friends on the Nets sports writing beat did, you know, this show necessitated a rewrite with about a quarter and a half remaining in Tuesday's contest. You know, when Brooklyn got down by 17 points, figured this would be a very somber episode. was all set to bemoan how the Nets coughed up Game 3 when they could have basically stuck the proverbial knife in the Bucks' back, but then blew that golden opportunity by losing by the throwback to the 1990 score of 86-83. So instead of going up 3-0, Brooklyn gave Milwaukee some life, and then Kyrie Irving joined Harden on the sidelines in the second quarter of Game 4 when he landed on Giannis Antetokounmpo's foot, spraining his ankle. I mean, I'd been telling you folks all year that good fortune in the health department was going to be the number one factor as to which team will advance the furthest in these NBA playoffs. And then it sure looked like the Nets would not be among the lucky ones this season. I know everybody likes to say things like, you know, you can't use injuries as an excuse or next man up. But come on. That's for guys like Spencer Dinwiddie and Jeff Green. You know, complimentary guys. When you're losing all-stars like James Harden and Kyrie Irving, that's going to be awfully hard for any team to overcome. Really, you're just not. I mean, not when your go-to guy in crunch time of Game 3 was Bruce Brown. Not when you're relying on Mike James to drive the offense after Irving went down in Game 4. So, you know, like I said, this Game 5 comeback came out of nowhere. Nets were sputtering on offense for the third game in a row, wasting some of the best defense they played all season. Now, you know, the consensus opinion was that Brooklyn just missed shots. You know, they got good looks, but they missed shots. And to channel Joe Biden for a second, what malarkey. It was only last week when I lauded the Nets for their magnificence and their ball movement in the first two games. You know, passing up good shots for great shots. 25 assists in Game 1, 27 assists in Game 2. Game 3, 15 assists. What happened? Folks, I'm sorry to tell you that it was more than just simply missing shots. You look at the tracking data on NBA.com, and it tells a completely different story. In the first two games, the Nets averaged around 300 passes per game. That dropped to about 248 per game in the two games in Milwaukee. And if you think pace played a large part in that, uh-uh. Nets averaged about 100 offensive possessions per game in both venues. But because of that change in mentality, however, the shots they took were more contested. Again, you know, not having Kyrie out there for the last two-plus quarters in Game 4 obviously contributed to this disparity. But if you're just isolating on Game 3 here, the ratio of shots that NBA.com marked as tightly guarded versus those that were deemed open was 58% to 42%, whereas those figures were pretty much reversed in Brooklyn. So the Nets got that ratio back over 50% open on Tuesday night, but you know the funny thing is, they didn't shoot appreciably better on the best looks, just 10 of 20 on wide open shots with at least 6 feet of distance. Of course, you know, having KD knock down everything even when bodied up by the hacking Bucks makes all the difference in the world. Durant made 10 of 16 shots on what NBA.com tracking deemed tightly contested. But, you know, will Durant have that kind of night again this series? Who knows? But I'm telling you, the root cause of the Nets offense's recent struggles was as much shot selection as shot making. I mean, other than Joe Harris, who's missed 16 of his last 23 point attempts, who out there really was missing a bunch of wide open looks. Now, you do have to credit the Bucks for some of that inefficiency, and the refs, who allowed them to play way more physically at home than in Brooklyn. But, you know, that's life in the NBA, folks. Been that way for a century, and ain't nothing gonna change, as they say. Milwaukee was clearly the more desperate team in both those games, so they laid the wood on the Nets, particularly KD. And, you know, I asked Blake Griffin about that after Game 3, and here's his response.
Hey, Blake, piggybacking on the physicality, it seemed like Milwaukee being desperate upped the physicality on their defensive end. When you looked at the film, was there some ways where you feel that you could have countered that better?
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely some ways we could have countered that a little bit better. And you know, we walked through them. We went over them. I think everybody sort of recognized them. I mean, the thing is, we we got shots. We got some open shots. We just didn't really hit shots. And like I said, I'm you know, willing to bet that we'll hit shots more often than not. So, you know, we just got to stick with our game plan, make those tweaks and make sure we come into game four, you know, with that physicality and intensity.
And Blake Griffin goes again, you know, with just missing shots. But anyway, whatever. Like I said, it really was a crying shame that the Nets couldn't take advantage of that opportunity, because, you know, their defensive effort pretty much all series has been exceptional. Brooklyn is holding the fifth most efficient offensive team in the league over the regular season to a ridiculous about 100 points allowed per 100 possessions. They're rebounding over 77% of Milwaukee's missed shots. Remember, you know, how they were around 65% in the Boston series? And, you know, if you take out that first quarter of game one where the Bucks had 9 second chance points on 9 offensive rebounds, the rate has been a couple of ticks higher since. So I asked Griffin about that, and here's the clip.
Hi, Blake. Since the first quarter of game one, the team has done a pretty good job limiting second chance points. Mm-hmm. Was there any kind of a gut bend that triggered that?
Was there any kind of what?
Adjustment?
More of just like a conscious, like, group rebounding effort. You know, always having a body on Brooke. I mean, Brooke's a huge. So always having a body on him, and then, you know, everybody coming back in. I think the first quarter of the first game, I didn't do a great job of, like, coming back in after, like, challenging a Giannis shot, or if he was floating out on the perimeter, I didn't do a great job of that. And I think as a whole, we've done a much better job of gang rebounding since that first quarter.
So good job by Blake Griffin there, a little bit of self-awareness. So, you know, Brooklyn is now in the driver's seat in the series, with a one-game margin for error. But, you know, before I get into what's in store going forward, let me keep the good vibes flowing by bringing in my special guest this week, the outstanding analyst on the Nets radio broadcasts. The great Tim Capstraw was gracious enough to give me some time. So here's my interview with Tim. Folks, I'm delighted to have on the line the great voice of the Nets' longtime color commentator for WFAN and the Nets Radio Network. The always fired up Tim Capstraw is on Zoom with me. Tim, thanks for giving me some time to talk Nets today. Anything particular happened recently that got you all fired up?
It doesn't take much for me. You know, it doesn't take much. And yes, that performance by Kevin Durant, even with very little sleep, I am fired up. I had a little bit of coffee. I don't need much because I'm still all pumped about what I witnessed last night. It was some performance. It was beautiful.
So, you know, you've been doing this for like 19 years now. So can you put that performance in some perspective for me? I mean, have you ever seen anything more incredible in person?
I don't think for an individual game. You know, I don't think for an individual game I have seen that. I've seen Jason Kidd-Willis' team through playoff victories in a series. But for an individual game, all things considered, down 17, not really having the help with any other star players, and the performance that Kevin Durant put on, for an individual game, it was the single best performance I had watched. And certainly in the playoffs, I think it's the best performance, individual game performance, that a net, and at least in our time, in the last 20 years, as we can remember, it is clearly the best performance ever.
Yeah, I mean, you put together highlight packages for the Nets radio account on Twitter. So as you were going through the video of the game, you know, what was KD doing that stood out to you? You know, it was about more than just making shots, right?
No, it was more than that. And what was surprising to me is I forgot how many great passes he had. You know, he had 10 assists, but there were a number of just beautiful passes, great setups, whether it be along the baseline to the opposite corner to Landry Shamet, little pick and roll with Blake Griffin, one in the first half where he was almost falling down, almost like, you know, parallel with the ground, and he was almost falling down and got it to Blake Griffin. I forgot how well and how brilliant his passing was in the game. And then his rebounding numbers were ridiculous. I saw as the game went on, though, as you saw, that most of his damage in the first half was off the block. You know, a lot of stuff off the block, off the wing. And what you noticed, and you saw this even during the game, obviously, that he went from that guy receiving the pass to the guy that was advancing the ball up over half court and then making a lot of plays off the high screen. The screen came up a little bit higher. He would attack different players. Oftentimes it was Brooke Lopez. Then they had to get him out. Then different guys were out there. And his unique ability to, he was swerving and making plays to the rim a couple times. Then he swerved and got to the elbow area. Then he pulled up and made a three. It was so, so amazing. Talk about just dominating at all three levels. But even in the, as I do the replays, you see the progression of going from a guy that was receiving the ball, and that was a nice adjustment by Steve Nash, to the guy that was making the plays happen himself up in half court, advancing the ball, or kind of playing the point guard that he plays quite often.
Yeah, and that makes him, the fact that he played all 48 minutes, not a second of rest, all the more impressive, because, you know, he had to work harder on offense, you know, and he was battling underneath. He had 17 rebounds. So, you know, he didn't, it's not like he got to take a break.
No. And then late in the game, he went on Middleton. He's blown me away this series about his defense. Some of his closeouts that I've watched have been like clinics, how quick he gets there, how fast, how long, obviously. And he competes in his individual defense, and then his help side ability to block shots. He's scrambling after loose balls. Listen, it was amazing. It was amazing in so many different levels. And again, his numbers say it. The defense, it's, you know, even stood out to me. Just as brilliant as it comes. That's what everybody's saying all around the country right now. No surprise here. This is one of the great performances in the history of the NBA and playoffs. And I was just really, really, and I know you were too, just thrilled to be there.
Oh, of course, yeah. But, you know, going into the game, the big story was James Harden. You know, he wasn't supposed to play, and then he did. And he ended up playing 46 minutes. I know he didn't shoot it well, but, you know, I just said before that I thought he was a settling presence. You know, what did you see from him that warranted 46 minutes?
Well, I think the importance of the game warranted whatever had to be done. Obviously, if Kevin Durant's never coming out and James Harden on a bad leg is playing 46, I think everybody knew the importance of this game. The Nets would have a very difficult time winning the series if they didn't win the game. So they played it like it was a game seven, because it felt like a game seven. And I thought James Harden, first of all, was an incredible inspirational leader. The fact that he played, and I didn't know going into the game, like how injured he still was. You know, was he really close to getting back? Was he going to be almost 100%? And it was obvious that he's not going to be that. He's not going to get to 100%, but you're right. He is a settling presence. I thought in the second half, as things progressed, he made a couple bullet passes down low. I think that Joe Harris and Bruce Brown, I set up guys a few other times. And I think he'll probably be capable of knocking down some of these shots. He was short on a few of them. I saw him in warmups. He shot the ball pretty well. But I'll be anxious to see what his recovery is like today, okay. You know, to say, you know, what his status is for tomorrow. And but it was inspiration. But you're right. They also, I think Budenholzer, the coach of the Bucks, always felt like he had to have a quality defender on him. And so the fact that maybe Drew Holiday was on him quite a bit was took Holiday off the fact that he might be guarding somebody else and maybe freed up some other people, because even though Harden wasn't trying to get by people, he was still a factor that you had to respect.
Yeah, I think also he got the crowd into the game, and I played at the top that, you know, then they introduced him. I was a little worried because, you know, Barkley said it was kind of a late arriving crowd, but they were in it. They didn't give up. And at that fourth quarter, probably as loud as I've ever
heard. You know what stood out to me? It wasn't a front-running crowd. It wasn't like after the fact they cheered. As the Nets were looking for energy, the crowd gave it to them. I thought it was unbelievable. I thought it was a different type. I've seen crowds go wild after you're watching the guy make three threes in a row or something. The crowd goes wild. There was a moment where the where the maybe the Nets got it within 10, but it was kind of you know, stable for a little bit. And then all of a sudden the crowd just kind of gathered up their energy. They had the towels going. It was, and it felt like, wow, they're trying to will these guys forward. And I thought it probably made an incredible, well, made an incredible difference. But I thought, think that that's a great point by you to acknowledge how good, how great the crowd was last night and what a difference they made.
Yeah, I'm talking with Tim Capstra, the analyst, next to longtime partner Chris Carino on the Nets radio broadcast. Tim, I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Jeff Green, another guy recovering from an injury, and then he lit it up with 27 points off the bench. And I thought Steve Nash made a wise move starting Green in the second half, even though it was Bruce Brown in that spot to start the game, and Nash rarely varies from that script. He hasn't really done it all year. But I thought riding Green early in that third quarter kept Brooklyn close enough until KD really took over in the fourth quarter. So what stood out to you, obviously the Green's obvious shot making, but what else?
Well, I thought he not only Steve Nash deserves credit, not only in the second half, but he took him out relatively quick. I don't have it in front of me, but about 4 or 5 minutes into the first quarter, he went with Jeff Green because frankly, the Bucks were not going to guard Bruce Brown, and they were just kind of laying way off of him. And you have to offset of that, especially if it's Brook Lopez out there. You have to create some kind of confusion. And then Jeff Green was not only did it in the third quarter, but he really helped the Nets throughout the game. He made some first quarter threes that made it somewhat respectable. Excuse me, I haven't slept much, but the I thought. Yeah, Jeff Green was amazing. His shooting, his toughness, guarding Giannis. I thought he had a good strategic, good hard foul where he wrapped him up late because you know that Jeff Green just understood that you don't, as the game gets late, don't give Giannis. He got a couple. Try not to give him anything right at the rim, make him earn it from the free throw line. And if you watch them closely, I think, and there's another guy I would check today. I thought he was laboring a little bit. Up and down the floor. I don't know if it was head to be foot related or be honest with you, we interviewed him after the game, Steve, and he's at the scorer's table and he's a really nice gentleman, incredibly great interview. He was exhausted. I mean, the exhaustion factor, and he's another guy though, because of his injury, hadn't been able to push his limits as far as fitness. And he was exhausted. I hope that, obviously he feels okay. And everybody just laid it on the line last night. It was amazing.
Yeah. So I got a couple more for you, Tim, if you don't mind. You know, the first one is a strategic one. And it comes from kind of like everyone in the Buck Zoom calls asking Giannis why he hasn't guarded Durant much in this series. You know, maybe he will, maybe he won't. But, you know, I don't think it matters because if the Bucks continue to play drop coverage on pick and rolls –
Exactly. Yeah. Or they switch. What are they going to do? The Nets are just going to set a ball screen up for him, right? They're just going to set a ball screen. They're either going to play drop or they're going to switch. Now, if you played him on him and you wanted to trap, if you wanted to use some kind of trapping, but you want to use his length around the basket also, you know, especially if Brook Lopez isn't in the game. So that's why they have such a, they predicate their defense so much on rim protection. That I don't know, but I think he would be screened off the play often. You know what I mean? Guys like Giannis aren't probably going to be great if one of the Nets comes up and sets a ball screen for Durant, and then all of a sudden again he's got the angles, he's got this, and there's no Giannis behind the play, so he could really attack the rim, especially if Brook Lopez wasn't in the game. I think that would occur. I wouldn't be surprised though if they had a situation again where Kevin Durant was bringing the ball up the floor and they just ran a double team quick at half court and then tried to deny the ball back to him. But they could do some of that. Maybe Giannis could guard him some. Listen, Middleton and PJ Tucker or even Drew Holiday's guarded him some in this series. They're considered some of the best defensive players in the league, and Giannis is too. I would give it a look if I were the Bucks. But I understand there are ways to get him off of it really quick, I think, by just setting a ball screen.
Yeah, so the last one I got for you is, you know, going to Milwaukee on Thursday is going to be tough. You know, that didn't look too good in the prior two games there. So what has to be better for Brooklyn to be able to close this one out on the road and avoid a game seven that, you know, really could go either way?
Well, I think more guys got to step up and make plays. I mean, if they're going to play, and you know, Nets are going to get threes. Joe Harris has got to make some threes. I thought Landry Shamet played very solid, especially in the second half. James Harden's got to, if he's playing, he's got to be able to make some shots. Nets are going to have to make some shots. You're right. They're going to send extra help towards Kevin Durant. They're probably going to not allow him to just go off again. And it's going to be up to other guys to be able to step up and make shots. Well, you know, up and down the lineup, Blake Griffin, Jeff Green, everybody just, you know, I think Claxton to play a little bit more. It's not about shooting with him, but I'm just saying he'll play probably a little bit more. I think you got to get some guys a little bit deeper in the bench. I think the amount of minutes that the Nets played, and it's only a one-day turnaround on one-day break, I think they're going to have to utilize a bigger bench. And guys are going to have to
It was kind of funny that both teams really only played seven guys in the second half.
Yeah, no,
Shamet for the Nets, and I think Connaughton, and I'm trying to remember. I'm slipping my mind, but maybe they had one other guy.
Bryn Forbes a little bit.
But he didn't play much in the second half.
I know. He didn't play much because the Nets were trying to attack him. They're trying to target him some. He made a listen, it was a really good game. I thought the Bucks. I thought they became very stagnant offensively. I think with all the switching the Nets do, teams get lulled into ISO basketball, and I thought that backfired on the Bucks, and they just didn't look comfortable down the stretch. And I thought Barkley made a pretty good, interesting statement on that ball that Giannis bobbled. Was he hurrying because he didn't want to get fouled? I thought that was it. You know, is that why he bobbled the ball? I looked at that a little bit. You never can tell exactly, but you're wondering in his mind, did he want to go a little quicker because he just wanted to get the shot up quickly and avoid the foul?
Well, Tim Capstra, I can't thank you enough for hopping on with me today. You're such a good friend, and your work with Chris Carino on WFN and the Nets Radio Network is getting much deserved praise during this run. Long time coming, in my opinion, but you know, thank you so much, Tim.
I follow you during the game. I follow your Twitter during the game because it helps me. It's like cheating on a test. And I follow what you say and follow the game. And sometimes I crack up because I can't be quite as when things aren't going well, you're not afraid to say it. But I ain't going to do that too much. But your knowledge of the game as it's happening is elite. You see the game and you can tweet it out quicker than anybody I've seen. In fact, I will say that there's a lot of guys out there that have helped me out. And I follow a little bit. It's become a new addition to how I broadcast the games. And whether it be the Nets Dailies guys or you or Tom Dowd or different guys. But I can't believe how quickly you see the game and how sharp you are throughout an entire broadcast. You are a must follow for people. And I think these podcasts are outstanding, and I appreciate all the work you do.
Well, thank you again, Tim. So you're telling me that the Tim Capstra experience on the radio is a composite figure?
It's a composite figure. I've been known. I can be influenced because I don't want to, you know, that's the thing about, you know, Twitter and all these, everybody knock, you know, people that, like, I'm an old guy, but at the same time, there isn't anybody you can't learn from. And somebody, oh man, that piques my interest, or I'm missing out on this or that. Yeah, I scroll a lot, but I just want you to do, when I'm scrolling, I'm looking at a lot of Steve Lichtenstein, and I'm really, really impressed, and I really appreciate it.
Well, believe me, I learn more from you than you from me. I thank you again, Tim. I'll let you go get some sleep and have a good trip to Milwaukee.
All righty. Can't wait.
So thanks again to Tim Capstra of WFAN and the Nets Radio Network. He's one of my favorite people, always positive, always looking to help people out. And him and Carino, just a terrific duo on radio. I mean, incredible chemistry. So they'll both be headed for Milwaukee today to prepare for their Game 6 broadcast. As of this recording, we have no idea whether Harden will be active for that one.
And, you know, we all assume Kyrie is done for at least this series. I know Reggie Miller floated this idea that the Nets should load manage their two remaining stars. But I don't think you can do that in the playoffs. You don't want to have to trust that Game 7 will go the same way as Game 5. I mean, the last two Game 7s the Nets played, the road team won. Brooklyn in Toronto in 2014 and Chicago at Barclays Center a year early. So I think you have to go into Game 6 with a sweeping the leg mentality. The Bucks have to be questioning themselves after letting Tuesday night slip away. Everyone's piling on Coach Budenholzer, not that he isn't deserving. But, you know, if he's thinking the solution is to have Giannis guard KD, I mean, that's why I brought that up with Tim. I mean, Tucker has done a really good job on Durant, holding him to 49% shooting from the floor and 25% from three so far this series, according to NBA.com tracking, at least. You know, he just gets into foul trouble on the road. That's going to happen. You know, my issue with refs has always been about what they don't call as much as what they do. So, you know, I expect Tucker and Drew Holiday both get back to being able to get into the Nets' bodies in Game 6 without fouling. Now, you know, the key for Brooklyn is to not get, like, hurried up. I think this is where Harden helps a lot. He just slows the game down. Yet, you know, there's usually time for him to initiate the right sequence that eventually leads to a good shot. You know, though Milwaukee has adjusted to not allowing Bruce Brown to get free in the paint pockets to hurt them with floaters, you know, I think the Nets can still take advantage anytime Brook Lopez is on the court. You know, if teams allow him to solely play rim protector, yeah, he can be a real difference maker on defense. But you know, I still see him the way he was as a Net. You put him in pick and roll where all he can do is drop, he can get a ton of easy looks because he just can't come out to contest and still be able to get back to protect the rim. Moving his feet just isn't his thing. So anyway, look for Brooklyn to go for it. But if the game starts to get away from them, I don't expect them to chase it. Not with only one day off between games 6 and 7. Still, the takeaway here is that we are now guaranteed at least one more game at Barclays Center, with the possibility always lurking that we might witness something historic. And for that, I'm most grateful. So that'll wrap up this episode of the City Game Podcast. Again, a big thank you to Tim Capstro of WFN and the Nets Radio Network. It's just a pip, huh? Hope it moved you to subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're using, Odyssey, Apple, Stitcher, etc. Also, give me some feedback, huh? Hit me up on Twitter or in the Apple Podcast comments section. So, you know, I'm going to have to play the next recording by ear. Could be a preview of the Eastern Conference Finals on Friday or Monday, or, heaven forbid, a season finale. Now check me out on Twitter for updates. So until next time, I'm Steve Lichtenstein of WFAN.com saying thank you for listening to the City Game Podcast.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.